First try.
Oh,
dude.
That's my boy Luke.
There.
No, you wanna hear something hilarious? All right, so this kid, I used to, bro. He's a Miami Heat fan, and me and him used to go at it in the comments on Twitter, dude. Like, we didn't follow each other. We weren't boys at all, dude. But the year the Celtics went to the finals, he was finally like, we were like, came to like a truce where we both like, he made fun of my golf swing. I made fun of the fact that he's like lives in Florida. Like, it was like a whole like, maybe he's not lived in Florida, but that's so fucking funny that Luke won. I'm glad that he listens and I'm glad that he entered. That's dope.
Let's see.
Is that the right kid? Oh, that might not be the right kid. Hold on 1 second. That might not be the right kid.
That's so funny.
That would be way funnier if it was the wrong kid. No, it's the right kid. Luke Barnes, right?
Barnes, yeah.
Yeah. That's the kid from Florida. He's a diehard Heat fan, so you know he actually knows ball. Just kidding. All Heat fans are fucking bandwagon. You hear me, Luke? Have fun in the play-in tournament again.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to episode 11 of the Breaking the Plane podcast. As always, brought in partnership with Primetime Productions, our boys over there at Primetime Prods, primetimeproductions.net. Check them out. Yeah, keep flipping me off over there, boys.
Jeez.
Starting on a good note today.
I was throwing up doing the pink one and the stink.
Wow.
Anyway. As always, I'm your host, Burge, back at it with you. Again, back with Joe Scherr and Mr. Anthony Ayahuasca. And Kojak is back after a one week absence due to being down in a hole too late at
just
night. So
8 feet inside the earth.
6 feet to be specific, but
whatever.
Yeah, you guys, Tony A. That's Tony A for short. Anthony Ayahuasca, aka Tony A, aka I'm going in a hut. How you doing? No, this was actually a pretty sick week of football, to be honest. Like, I didn't have to bother with college football. There were some upsets. There was some chalk. There were some good things. There were some bad things. I don't know. It was just like, I don't know. The Bills won, but the Eagles lost. So it's like one of those, like, I don't know. But, like, I don't know. Good weekend of football nonetheless.
A lot of interesting results, you know, coming across the scoreboard when you were watching football the other day. Obviously, we didn't have
Happy
to
Happy Hanukkah,
the
everyone, too.
Happy Hanukkah, yes.
Yeah.
Mr. Joe.
And shit. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on.
Very interesting week, like you said, Joe. We didn't have to suffer through any Patriots football on Sunday because they played on Thursday night. I want to get right into this game.
Yeah, fuck.
We didn't have to suffer at all this week, Barry.
No, it was great. It was a nice surprise. I started the night off watching watching the Patriots, and I had the Bruins on the phone as Kojak's dying over there.
Violently sneeze.
thank you for muting. Thank you for muting yourself.
He's allergic to Patriots wins.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable. Body control by Kojak sneezing during the Patriots talk. Love that.
Well, as I was saying, I had the Bruins on my phone, and I had the Patriots on the big screen TV. I was like, I'll watch the Patriots for a bit. And then I'm watching the Bruins on my phone, and they're getting absolutely stomped. All right. They just decided not to show up in the game. So I was watching that. I'm like, whatever. And then the Patriots decided to start scoring touchdowns. I'm like, this is too funny not to pay full attention to. Like, I was literally sitting there laughing the entire game, the entire first half of that game. I'm like, where the hell is this coming from? Patriots end up winning this game 21-18. I'm all for it. It didn't change their draft position one bit. All about it. Like, it was great to actually see.
We said this on Sunday. We're like, dude, if it's the Bills, if it's the Steelers, it's the Jets, we're cool. We're cool. Yeah. We're cool. You beat those teams, we're fucking cool. Now you start beating teams like the Giants and like the Commanders and shit like that. Let's pump the fucking brakes here. we can pull one over in Pittsburgh. Dude, imagine being a Steelers fan. You're like, oh, bro. Thursday night, I already called out of work Friday. The boys are absolutely lubed up in the parking lot. We're going to go absolutely curb stomp the Bailey Zappi Patriots at home. Like, dude, I would have been losing my mind. This is like when I went to the Bears game last year. I was like, all right, fucking get right game. The Bears suck. Justin Fields suck. Dude runs all over us in the first half. They have to put Bailey Zapp. They bungle the whole pit. They bungle the QB situation. It's a horrible night. And then it's the same thing with the Steelers, dude. After the first drive, I knew the Patriots were going to win this game. After the first touchdown drive, they zipped right down the field, and I was just like, "Yeah, it's. I don't think they're gonna lose this game. The institutional knowledge of the Steelers of how they play defense is just like doesn't matter. We could play Madden. It doesn't matter. We beat them every time.
Now, I think I did. I saw a stat on this. I think that was the first opening drive touchdown that they've scored
this season.
This season, yeah,
yeah,
yes.
Why?
Right?
Yeah,
it's the first,
it's December.
14 weeks in. That was our first one.
Oh my god, bro.
With Bailey Zappi and Zeke Elliott.
It was unbelievable, right? Like unbelievable that they hadn't done that this year. And there was another stat I saw too that involved Brady doing something that the Patriots haven't done since Brady.
Oh, it's like 200 plus yards and like two TD or.
I think it might have been a three TD quarterback, right? Was it like three
since
touchdowns?
2018.
Yeah, since Brady was here, and I read
in the
that
first
stat.
Half because we yes. didn't lose, we scored we didn't score anything in the second half, right?
Right.
Fell asleep at halftime.
You could tell that Kraft buzzed into the headset and was like, "Fucking knock it off,
tone it down, yeah,
fucking knock it off, Zappy. How about you hit a Steelers guy right in the fucking numbers for us, please? No problem, coach."
Biggest takeaway in this game for me was seeing what Zeke Elliott could do when he was a lead back. Dude, he showed up in this one. I really want him back next year. I really would love to have him come back next year. Yeah, 7 receptions, 70 yards on the ground. I mean, the rushing numbers weren't all that great, but then again, with the offensive line problems that the Patriots have had, that's not to be surprised. But, I mean, it was clicking in that first half. It was like, where was this all year? If they had scored as many points – in a game as they did today, they'd be in the playoff race. Like they'd be out like on the low end of the playoff race, but they would still be in the conversation if they had just been this competent. And this wasn't even all that competent of an offensive game for the Patriots because, like we said, all the points were scored in the first half. So they went completely shut down in the second half. Zappy threw that interception, and it seemed like all the swag that he was playing with in the first half was gone. And it was like, he was like, now he's back to being that kid that doesn't have the confidence. And yeah. But at the end of the day, it was great to see. Anytime you beat the Steelers, Mitch Trubisky looked terrible in this game. He should have thrown 3
interceptions.
Didn't look
like an NFL player.
It was unbelievable just seeing how inept he was. I mean, he's going to be playing again this week for the Steelers because Kenny Pickett is again out. And it's like, dude, this guy, this brings me to a point about everybody wanting to tank for a high draft pick. Like, Mitchell Trubisky was the 2nd overall pick in his draft. And what a whiff. Of a guy. I mean, he showed, I think maybe he had one decent, really decent season with Chicago before the wheels just kind of fell off on him. But it's like a cautionary tale. Like just because you have a 1st or 2nd overall pick, nothing is a slam dunk. Like it's less than 50% that you're going to hit on the guy. And that's where I just wanted to make that point because you saw what a former 2nd overall pick looks like on Thursday night.
North Carolina quarterback nonetheless, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I find like we always preface these games, right? Who's to say more about this says way more about the Steelers than it says about the Patriots.
100%.
This is classic quarterback change buy-in, like kind of like motivation kind of situation. Like I said before, I think Bill O'Brien and the Patriots scheme, the old Tom Brady scheme, the short pass option pass scheme, versus the Steelers kind of zone blitz defense.
Yep.
Absolutely shreds it every time. As you can see, it doesn't really matter who the fucking quarterback is or who the pass catchers are. The scheme beats the offensive scheme beats the defensive scheme in this situation every time. But I think this just goes to show, dude, it's just like, it's all about confidence at the quarterback position. You said it best, dude. The first half, Bailey Zappi was on his toes ahead of the defense, playing confidently, throwing the ball with confidence, having confidence in wide receivers, putting the ball where it needs to be. And then after he throws that pick, he kind of turtles and turns into a shell of himself. It's such a confidence heavy position. The best quarterbacks, i.e. Tom Brady, have been the most mentally tough, the most able to shake off bad mistakes, the most able to overcome adversity. I think that's still the most crucial a tribute to have as a quarterback would be overcoming adversity, not having your emotions get too up or too down. And we'll obviously get to that when we talk about the Chiefs game, your quarterback's emotions. But yeah, I think this says a hell of a lot more about the Steelers. I think they're kind of cooked with their quarterback situation. There's a bunch of quarterback. There's a bunch of teams in this league that are kind of stuck in the same limbo situation where they have a fucking loaded roster, and they just can't figure it out at the quarterback position. But yeah, Mitch Trubisky's not an NFL quarterback. It was laughable at some points in times. He was either late or wrong on every read. Every read, he would have the read right, and he would make the right throw, but it would be a second or two late. And a second or two late in the NFL is years compared to like any other level of football. It was a great game to watch as a Pats fan because you finally got to fucking see something positive instead of just all negative. But
I think a
Tommy Curran report brought us right back into the negative before this podcast started.
Absolutely, and that's where we're gonna go with this next. Came out today, just a couple hours ago, I think.
I know, right before we jumped.
That basically, I'm paraphrasing what Tommy Curran had released out there. Basically, after the debacle that occurred in Germany against the Colts, Robert Kraft reportedly made the decision to part ways with Bill Belichick after the season. And while after that game, you can certainly buy into that narrative. Robert Kraft is big about, you know, the international relations, and it's big about the, you know, being on the big stage. They were on in so many countries for that game, and his team looked awful. Obviously, we know what happened with Mac Jones down the stretch there. We threw that horrendous interception as they were driving to win. And I have an issue with this coming out right now. Why is a prominent reporter like Tommy Curran sitting on this kind of report for 3 weeks? If this was really, truly the decision was made, there's no going back from it. If it was truly decided then, why did he sit on it for 3 weeks? Because he straight out came out and said it was the week after that, based on the conversations that he had, that it was very clear that a decision was made. Why are you sitting on that? You know, sure. I'm a big Bill Belichick, you know, supporter. I want him back next year, but I'm not naive to the fact that there's a good possibility that he's not. I'm not naive to that, but the timing just seems so off. And given how the team looked, even in the weeks after that, you're still sitting on that report. You waited until after they showed a little bit of promise to drop that. What, 5 days later after that game, he was on, I was watching, a clip on NBC Sports Boston. It was like a clip on the post game where he was there with Ted Johnson, Michael Hawley, and you know, there was somebody else. I can't remember the name, but he basically was talking about how this might put a pause lever on everything. Why are you saying that if you have this knowledge in your back pocket that this was decided? So that's my opinion on it. It's still speculation to me. I mean, you could say that they've agreed and all this is coming out that he's getting fired. I mean, I'll believe it when I see it. Again, I'm not naive to the fact that it could happen. But I'm also like I said, I'm not buying it until I actually see it happen. What were your thoughts on it, Joe?
I think this is another proxy war in the cold, a proxy situation in the Cold War that's going on between Belichick and Kraft.
Good point.
I think everything that comes out until Bill actually doesn't have a fucking job with the Patriots, or until something actually like changes are actually made, I think this is all posturing and leveraging. You saw the icy handshake at, I think it was Vrabel's induction into the Patriots Hall of Fame. You heard rumblings at the beginning of the year about Bill being on the outs from Kraft's side, more on the lines of pretty much saying that Kraft's not scared to fire Belichick, that it might be time to move on. And then you get the reports about Belichick's contract, right? Seemingly Belichick being like, "Whoa, Mr. Kraft, I don't think, let's not go that far. You did sign me to this contract, this NFL coaches contract, which are fully guaranteed." And then now you have it coming out from Karin, a team guy, that Belichick's out at the end of the year. So I think we're at a point now where, I mean, we have 4 weeks left of the season. I don't think that you could be considered a lame duck coach at this point. We're kind of down the road. And I think if they really wanted to get the narrative out there that Bill was going to be gone Kraft and Curran. I mean, I think if they wanted to get it out there that they really wanted Kraft gone, this would have came. You were right. This is odd timing. It would have came out right after the game. Because if then if you put that out there, it puts a seed down on all the players' minds and everything starts snowballing and everything starts kind of moving towards that thing that you set in motion, which would be firing Bill. So I think he kept that in his back pocket at by direction from the team saying that, hey, we want to use this as leverage, but I don't think we want to put him out there as a lame duck coach because we want to make sure that the product in the field doesn't suffer because of this. Like you said, I think it's 100% a possibility. I don't think it's a done deal yet. I think that even though I want him gone doesn't mean it's the right or prudent thing to do. I understand that I'm just a guy with a bought a microphone off Facebook Marketplace. So yeah, I think this is just another Bay of Pigs. This is just another Vietnam War. This is just another fucking Korean War in the proxy war of the Cold War that's going on between the two superpowers left in Foxborough, which is Belichick and Kraft.
And you know, another thing too is like you hear all the talk about how Belichick is an asset, and you hear all the rumblings throughout the season that they may want to try to trade him. And if they're making the decision now, and it's coming out now that they're going to trade him, or I'm sorry, part ways with him, you lose a little bit of leverage there. You lose leverage in terms of what you might actually be able to seek from a trade partner, if there even actually is one. I don't really buy into that. I think I don't know who in the league would really realistically want to trade a significant asset for a 71-year-old head coach. I mean, let's be real. I mean, the Chargers, they're not, Bill's not going to fix that mess out there. You know, you hear all the talk about the Commanders. I mean, the Commanders are still not in a very good spot. Why would Bill want to go there and rebuild another team? So like, it's one of those things where the leverage and like you said, the posturing and all of that, I think is a real major factor here. Just based on how the reporting has gone, we know how like leaks have gone with the Patriots over the years. Even when Brady was here, with the leaks that were coming out with Brady trying to leverage the team and all that, you could tell which side was leaking this information just based on the information that came out. So I think there's a strong possibility that's what this is. And I'm not going to buy into anything until there's like a legitimate, like real, like national source that will come out and back up what they're hearing. Cause I think I read an article a few days ago about Mike Florio backpedaling on him with Pro Football Talk, backpedaling on the whole trade thing and how he may actually be back next year for the Patriots. So it's like, there's so much smoke going on right now that it's tough to really buy in and really believe anything that you hear. So let's wait and see how it plays out. Right.
And I think it also comes down to the fact that like Bill wants the record and his easiest path is staying here. Swallowing his pride and accepting help is his easiest path to getting that record. I mean, yeah, if you turn around, well, I mean, what is he? I mean, after that game, I think it's like 14 or 15, between 13 and 15 games away from the record. So I think that turning it around and getting to the playoffs next year, and then the year after that being, I don't want to say an elite team, but at least a Super Bowl hopeful, if not contender, the year after. So, I mean, I'm kind of lightning on the fact of Bill coming back, but I think it's more through the lens of, I think that the parameters in which he would come back under are starting to loosen. Because I think that you brought up the whole point about him being worth the first round pick. I didn't even think about that in my whole like soliloquy about like the arms race. Like that's 100% Bill being like, no, I'm just, like other teams will still. Like, you don't have to fire me. Like, other teams will still, like, give up assets for me. And to be totally honest, I think that that might be his easiest route to keeping an NFL head coaching job in the league would be to bolster his value and either change Kraft's minds and stay here or get traded. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I think, like you said, it's the thing you let off with the timing, with the current thing, how he's referencing something that happened like a couple weeks ago. Dude, the NFL is a week by week business, dude. Shit changes fucking daily. Like, I don't know. There is some correlation between where he's getting the information and when they wanted the information to come out. And I guess we're really not going to know why until kind of a couple months, maybe a couple years, a couple decades down the line.
I mean, if he wanted the information to come out now, like say it's the ownership that wants it to come out now, it's going to trying to leverage the fact that the Patriots just won a game and looked finally for the first time in probably, I would say, most of the season competent for half of football on the offensive side. And now you're going to drop the report 5 days after that game. after you were just on TV saying that this might pull the or slow the eject lever on the whole thing. Like, what are we doing? Like, you're contradicting yourself when you're saying something like this. And it's like, how do you know what to believe? How do you know what to believe? I mean, Curran is a respected reporter. He's very plugged into what's going on down there. He's been right on a lot of things, but this just screams like fishy to me. Just 3 weeks after you saying that the conversation happened, why did you sit on it? Why did you sit on it after they lost 6-0 to the Chargers? Like,
yeah. Even though I when I read this report, I took off my pants and covered myself in Crisco because I was like, yeah, I still have to be objective here, dude. There's no, this could be, I don't know. Like, dude, as soon as you said the timing thing, it sent me down a whole rabbit hole of like, well, what is actually going on here? And I, honest, dude, there's, dude, the thing, all right, I told myself, I had a talk. I looked in the mirror at work today. I was like, you're not going to yell in the podcast today. You're not going to get fired up. But here Cook. I am, yelling, Cook. fired up. Dude, but the thing is like, you know they didn't have the fucking, they don't have a frank conversation about it. Because they didn't have a frank conversation about the whole fucking Brady thing. So why would they have a frank conversation about this? Dude, it's like these old guys have no communication skills. It's like, dude, Bill is amazing on College game day. When he does all this shit for NFL films, he's so forthcoming. He's so insightful. Everything he says, there's so much nuance and description behind everything he says. Every word that he says carries weight in those situations. But when you get behind a mic in front of to address what's happened with your football team, or you have to get in front of Kraft and like actually hash out your differences, it's almost like they don't have the conversations. It's aggravating that they're having it through the fucking, well, for what it seems like right now, it's aggravating that are having it through the media, because what they really need to do is have a frank, just like they needed with Brady. They need to have a frank conversation. You need to be honest with each other. This shit is fucking bad, dog. We're 3-10. Like, you guys need to have an honest conversation. Bill, what do you want? Oh, I want to fucking break Shula's record. Okay, you can stay as quarterback here. I mean, you can stay as coach here, but we're going to be implementing a lot of fucking rules. Your defense and you do whatever you want. Employ your kids or anything else. We're making Mayo the assistant head coach. We're keeping O'Brien, giving him fucking authority to make some calls on the offensive game day roster. And then we're bringing in an entire different team to pick the players. Like, there is an avenue here, but there's so many difficult conversations that I feel like that the Patriots are averse to having, like letting the best quarterback in the game go, like letting botching the transition from the best coach in the game to whatever's next after that. It's just frustrating that they need to have these conversations, and it seems like they're having just a cold war through the media.
Well, you work with somebody for so long, your ego is eventually going to get in the way. And Kraft has an ego, clearly. I mean, you saw it early on with Bill Parcells and that whole thing, the way that all went down early on in his ownership. Bill Belichick has an ego. I think that goes without saying. Like, that's easy to just say. And even when Brady was here, he had an ego too. And like, I think all three of those guys weren't going to have the frank conversations. And I think it all kind of wore out its welcome. And there's a good chance that that's happening here right now with Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft. But let's make sure, like, Bill's as much to blame as Robert, and vice versa, if they're not going to sit down and hash this thing out. Like, fine, you want to move on and do your own thing, then let's mutually part ways. Thank you for your 23 years. Thanks for everything you did. You're one of my best friends, but the working relationship just isn't there anymore. That's what happened with Brady. That's what happened with Brady. The relationship was gone. It deteriorated to a point. It was time to move on. Same thing could be happening now, but if you're gonna act like high school girls and can't sit there and have a conversation about this, like high schoolers. High schoolers play the games. That's what this seems like. If you're going to go out and it's a battle for public perception right now, the public opinion. That's exactly what it is. And they're trying to see who can get the most behind them. Because I can guarantee you right now, obviously Kraft's winning that. Majority of the fan base wants Bill gone. And Bill's trying to make it like, look like, hey, no, like I'm still here. Like I want to keep coaching here. And this is why if Bill shifts that to him, Kraft's not going to make a move. I think Kraft is going to go, as being a fan himself before an owner, I think he's going to go with where a large portion of the fan base sits, the educated fan base. I'm not talking about the Yahoos on Twitter. And he's gonna make a decision based on that. I don't think that decision's been made. And we could sit here and talk about this all night about, you know, this report. And, you know, we obviously have had some frank conversations in our Twitter chat and on this podcast between you and I, Joe, about where we sit on this whole thing. Time's gonna tell, and we'll know probably a month from now. We're gonna know a month from now. We're gonna know the answer to this question, and we'll be sure to give you our frank reactions to this. If Bill Belichick goes, I may be in tears on the podcast. We'll see if that actually happens. We'll both be
in tears.
Joe's gonna be in Crisco, you know, lubed up in Crisco on camera.
I might have to re-up. Might have to get the new body bag full of Crisco. They were like the shake chicken, put me in the bag and just shake me in the Crisco up. Nice lubed up. Thank God my couch isn't leather. I wouldn't be able to sit.
Yeah. So more to come on that. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see. The smoke and mirrors game is going to continue over the next month. And just imagine the storyline if they find a way to win out. Just imagine where that's going to go.
You fucking read my mind. I was like, this asshole Bill is going to be like, you know what? We might as well fucking win out. Like, you know what I mean?
If he wins out with Zappy,
it's going to fucking
happen. He wins out with Zappy and beats the Chiefs, the Bills, the Broncos, and the Jets, Bill's going to take some flack for cutting Zappy early in the season from people that don't understand how the roster management and asset management works. But he's going to be able to pin this entire thing on Mac Jones at the end of the day. Yeah. And if Robert Kraft was the one that was calling for Mac to play all the way, and that's the reason why he was the guy who wanted them drafted, and he, you know, all of this and that, and Bill just says, F you, I'm going to go out and roll Zappy now, and I'm going to win, you know, 5 straight games to end the season. Gonna make for some interesting talk. So we'll see what happens. We'll see. I don't expect them to win out by any means. I don't think anybody really should have that expectation, despite having the recency bias of a win on Thursday night. But, you know, we'll see. But I think that's enough Patriots talk for right now. Oh, I just want to shout out, we did do our second giveaway, our jersey giveaway here for Patriots jersey Hunter Henry. Congrats to one of our listeners at underscore Luke Berenice, Barense. Joe, I understand that you've had some interactions with him on Twitter before.
Yeah, this is a Miami Heat fan that I met in the comments on Twitter, which is a true rags to riches story that we're here right now. Shout out to Luke. Always appreciate someone that you can have an argument with, but also be friends with at the end of the day. So he railed on my golf swing, which I took very personally. We got in the mud a little bit, and then we came out on the other side better people, mutuals now. But I'm glad somebody I knew went ahead and won this jersey. He deserves it. But the Heat suck, man. The Heat suck. I don't know what the hell you're doing down there. You got that new rookie who's probably going to hit like 9 threes versus the Celtics and whenever they end up probably playing this postseason, even though you guys will be like the 13th seed with 5 games left, win them all and then get in the fucking play in and then beat the Bucks in the first round. Like, we do this every fucking year. But congrats, Luke. Please don't burn it.
Thanks for chiming in, listening to us, and getting in on that giveaway. Next game, we're going to talk about our beloved Detroit Lions against the Chicago Bears at Soldier Field in Chicago. What a disappointing game. This was a painful one. This was painful. The Chicago Bears beat the 9-3, now 9-4 Detroit Lions, 28-13. I mean, there was a period in time where Detroit kind of came back, made it a game in the second quarter, but outside of that, the highlights that I saw and when I was watching Red Zone, it just seemed like Chicago was kind of in control most of this game. Really hurt. I mean, Jared Goff throwing 2 interceptions, that's not a recipe for success. I mean, Amon-Ra St. Brown, only 3 receptions on 9 targets. Whenever he's not
getting... I was going to bring that up too, yeah.
Whenever he's not getting his receptions, that is a recipe for disaster for the Detroit Lions. I mean, the running game... averaging 6 yards a clip was good for them, but too many turnovers, too many sacks. And, you know, Justin Fields had himself a pretty good day, I'd say, with running the ball as well as throwing it. DJ Moore, another guy who went off in this game with 2 touchdowns, just an all around letdown game. I think we know where the Chicago Bears are. You know, they're very happy where they're at right now. They're not tanking for a draft pick. They already got the number one draft pick locked up courtesy of their trade last year with the Panthers. They're sitting pretty. They're happy. What were your thoughts on the game, Joe?
Yeah, so this is classic. Who's it say more about? And late season losses for good teams, it's always going to say more about you. Mm-hmm. I think the Bears are playing some inspired football right now because I think we talked about how it was kind of weird that they added at the deadline. Dude, but Sweat has been an absolute monster for this defense, dude. If they can get their offense figured out like they kind of had on Sunday, I think – shout out Big Cat. I think the Bears might be back. I think that whoever threw out there that they might be able to get a first-round pick for Justin Fields is smoking actual crack.
Yes.
I think maybe moving on from Fields and using that asset to kind of move up or trade up in that category I think would be a good idea. But – I think it's scary. I think we just talked about the Steelers being one of these teams, but I really don't want the Lions to turn into one of these teams that are fucking loaded but don't have the quarterback. It seemed like one of those games where Jared Goff wasn't comfy and the Lions looked like ass, dude. Every fucking time that you get him uncomfy, they look like ass, especially on offense. And like you said, Amon-Ra St. Brown, 3 receptions on 9 targets. That's not a recipe for success. We come on here every fucking time that the Lions lose. We're like, Amon-Ra, 16 targets. He only had 7 catches, or like 9 targets. He only had 3 catches. Like, there has to be a point where, I mean, and then you look at Sam Laporta has 2 receptions for 20 yards on 6 targets. Like, there's an efficiency factor here with Detroit that is a huge Achilles heel in their effectiveness, in their ability to win a game. Their defense is their defense. They're not a great defense. They're a motivated defense. If they're motivated and if everything kind of goes their way, they're a good enough defense. But I don't think Detroit's defense is good enough to win alone. If their offense is turning the ball over 3 times, they're definitely not good enough to get over a hump like that. I mean, Jared Goff is 20 of 35 for 127 net yards after sacks. Like, that's just not good enough to get it done. So, yeah, I think this is as a Lions fan, I don't know how mad you could actually get, to be honest, but this would be a very, very, very disheartening and jarring loss for me if I was a diehard. I'm a Fairweather Lions fan. I will dump you guys as soon as you lose next week. Say goodbye to the BTB boys. Maybe not very sure. Say bye to me. I'm out of here. I'm jumping off that bandwagon. Get me a neck roll. I'll be hitting my head on the pavement. I don't care. Like, I think a lot of people are in Detroit right now, and I think that's when a lot of these teams that I think you saw it with the Jaguars earlier in the season, I think you see it with a lot of teams that are up and coming, and I think you might even be seeing it with the Eagles right now. I'll get to that. But like, everybody's on the Detroit bandwagon. There's a lot of expectations that they're supposed to be cleaning up against teams, especially like the Bears, even though it's a divisional game. They're still not great. But yeah, this is jarring as a Lions backer as we are, or a Lions diehard like a lot of people in Detroit are. This is a tough one to swallow.
Yeah, definitely. I share that sentiment. I'm looking at the remaining schedule for the Detroit Lions. They host the Broncos. I believe it's on Saturday night, and then they have the Vikings twice and the Cowboys. If they come out of that, anything?
Wait, isn't it the Cowboys twice and the Vikings?
They have twice the Vikings, 2 times on the Vikings. The Vikings,
okay. Yeah. I don't know who the hell.
Regardless. And then the Cowboys. They, at worst, need to come out of that 500, 2-2. Dude, I want them 3-1.
That's 11-6, dude.
I'm saying for you to feel good about how they're playing down the stretch, yes, going into the playoffs. Yeah. You need them to beat the Vikings twice. That has to be an absolute yes, especially when the Vikings just made a switch to Nick Mullins from Josh Dobbs. Up there. So that's a team that's kind of out of it, playing for spoilers, all that. The Broncos are a team. Let's go, Stoneface. The Broncos are a team that are fighting for a playoff as well. So that's going to be a real good test for this team. And then obviously you have the Cowboys who are fighting for the number one seed in the conference. That'll be another really, really good test for the Lions. So like I said, worst 2-2, but I want to see them come out of this 3-1. 3-1, end the season. That'll put them at 12-5, and you'll feel really good about them going into the playoffs. So next week's a good test. We want to see them battle. You're going to see them bounce back from a bad loss. You know, that's what next week presents an opportunity for them to do. So that'll be interesting to see. I want to pose this question to you, Joe. If you're a Chicago Bears fan, You have the number one overall pick. Are you moving on from Justin Fields?
Yes.
And taking a quarterback? You are.
Yeah, dude.
What if Justin Fields decides to show you something these last 4 weeks? I'm going to throw a hypothetical at you.
All right. So I guess my thing would be is like, how does it look? You know what I mean? Like, this is such a tough question because I think there's an opportunity in this draft to maybe get aggressive at the top with a wide receiver. I think it would be – let me compartmentalize my thoughts here. You can win with Justin Fields, but I don't know at how efficient or how high of a level. I don't think that his play style is conducive to a long NFL career at the quarterback position, especially in the NFC North. So if I was the Bears, I would be drafting a quarterback with the number one overall pick. But I think if a team got nuts, I would definitely entertain trading back. Like if a team at four or at three wants to get to one and they're going to be crazy like Carolina was last year and you can kind of be set up in the same position you were. Now you have Marvin, maybe you have Marvin Harrison Jr., you have DJ Moore, you have Justin Fields, and you have a stocked young defense. So I think that that could be a advantageous position. But we've talked about Caleb Williams on this podcast. We've talked about the red flags of his attitude. We've talked about the red flags of his emotions. All of that shit aside, that kid is fucking nasty. He is objectively better at playing quarterback than Justin Fields. But there is I don't know if the infrastructure in Chicago is at a point to which a pass heavy, playmaking heavy quarterback can come in and, as a rookie and thrive right away.
That's a fair point. And, you know, I'm kind of on the fence with where I need to go with that. I still need to see a little bit more from Justin Fields. And that's why I threw that hypothetical out to you right there.
No, of course.
If he plays like he did against the Lions on Sunday, the rest of the season, it's going to make the decision pretty damn hard for the Bears if they're going to move on, because no one's going to pay a top asset to take Justin Fields from them. I mean, you're going to have to exercise his option. You're only getting 2 years of control out of it if you're going to make a trade for Justin Fields. And
but going back to your point, I think the best situation for that is if he plays well. Like if he makes the situation hard for you, you should probably trade him, because that'll probably be the highest his trade value will ever be.
That's a very good point. And absolutely, especially because you're going to have to go to a team, you're only getting 2 years of real true control out of it. You're going to have to pay the guy if you're going to trade for him, and you're going to have to commit to him. So he's going to have to show something. And, you know, maybe you get a team that wants to bite on it to give like maybe a mid to high second round pick for him. You're not getting a first round pick for him. Maybe like 28 to 32. But again, those teams that have those picks probably set at that position. You know, you're making deep playoff runs. You're going in the AFC. You're talking conference championship. You're talking Super Bowl, that kind of that area of the draft. So definitely something that we want to make sure that we get to monitor with this. I want to move on to another game here, and I'm gonna move on to the Rams and the Ravens. I want to go to the Rams and the Ravens. I know you had a point. We were going to talk about the Colts Bengals. Joe, you want to give your point on the Bengals here real quick before we move on?
Dude, just shout out Jake Browning. Shout out Jake Browning, dude. I am as you'll see in my picks coming up, I am a sucker for the overlooked guy from I don't want to say small, but from a non like in your face Power Five school. I know they're a Power Five school, but they're not. Washington is not considered a quarterback factory. They remind me of the Eagles in 2017, dude. They do, man. They do. They have a lot of good skill position players on offense. They have a really good defensive line. They can make some shit happen. And I think Jake Browning, if you're listening, has come on the pod, but I don't mean this as it's going to say. He's dumb enough to be like, no, I can do this. We're fine. And it's like, dude, they don't have that. Dude, they're 7-6. There's four games left to the end of the season. If they go 3-1, they're going to be a 10-win team in the playoffs. And they're going to be in a, I don't want to say advantageous, but they're going to be in a pretty good position to maybe win a playoff game. So, because we've talked about how wide open the playoffs are with all these quarterbacks injured. I don't know. Just want to say shout out Jake Browning. I see you. And I think that come playoff time and come later in the season, your boy's going to be a Bengals money line dog for the rest of the season, dude.
Let's go. Love it. I mean, they got an interesting schedule the rest of the year. Vikings, Steelers, Chiefs, Browns. So not exactly.
Damn, they are going to go 3-1. They might go 4-0 about how they're playing right now.
They very well could play in the Chiefs and the Browns. Chiefs at Arrowhead. Browns are you know, Joe Flacco is Mr. Joe Cool again all of a sudden. I hate it. I can hate that guy. But good for him, being a guy that was sitting on the couch watching football, and now he's won a couple of games for the Browns. That's a cool story. Definitely very winnable games. Could go. I think it could go either way. I think you could see them go 4-0, or I could see them. You could see them go 1-3, 2-2. So definitely an exciting team to watch down the stretch here. But we're going to move on to the other AFC North team that Joe has been a huge fan of on this podcast, picking them and all that. It's the Baltimore Ravens beating the Los Angeles Rams 37-31 in overtime on a walk-off punt return. That was a great way to see that game, man. This game had no shortage of offense. Lamar Jackson was balling out both through the air and on the ground. Matthew Stafford had a really good day. I mean, no turnovers in this game. There were a few fumbles that were recovered by the, the fumbling team. Just a good offensive football game which is what the NFL wants. And I think it says a lot about the Ravens, who were, you know, this was a game which they probably, I don't want to say they expected to, you know, walk through, but I think they expected to handle it the way that they've been playing.
Oh, West Coast team coming east, like yeah. Team ascending versus a team descending, yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, it took everything, took extra time for them to come out on top, but they found a way to do it. And I think it says a lot about what their ceiling is for this season. I was not a big Baltimore Ravens guy going into the season this year. I thought it was going to be that AFC North was going to be a battle. And, you know, they're kind of, I don't want to say they're running away with it just yet, but they have a really, really strong cushion in that division. So I think they're a team that can go the distance here. And I think the way that they won on Sunday, given how the defense wasn't really playing that well, they found a way to still come out on top. And it's something that with Lamar quarterback, you haven't really, I mean, you've seen him win games, but like you haven't really seen like a true, like stick it out offensive, you know, shootout like this where he's really come out on top. And I thought he was excellent in this one.
No, you led right into my point. I am so happy that the Baltimore Ravens won a shootout, dude. Before I give my hot take, I'm going to go run through the reasons of why I'm going to give my hot take at the end. Mm-hmm. So
here we go.
Ravens. All right, everybody chill out. So Ravens. Five guys with multiple receptions, four guys with four or more receptions, three guys with five or more receptions. That is the definition of playing the point guard position. But then you go back to Lamar Jackson. He has three touchdowns as well as 70 yards on the ground. Dude, the dude, if it's a quarterback award, the dude's the MVP. If you take out all position players, Lamar Jackson is by far the most valuable player in the league. You take away his best offensive weapon in Mark Andrews, and the next week he scores 37 points with, like I said, five receivers having multiple receptions, four of them having over four. So I think that the Ravens defense kind of gets looked over in this one. I think they have a good defense. I think they had a really bad day. But I think, dude, Lamar is just at a level that we haven't seen anybody get to since kind of Mike Vick, when he was like early with Philadelphia, when he could still put the moves on in open field, but also throw for 350 yards and three touchdowns a game. I love the Ravens. This game, classic. Who's it say more about? I think it says more about the Ravens, but I don't want to let the Rams off the hook in a good way. I think this says a lot about the Rams too. I think McVay getting players like Kupp, Nacua, like players like that, like, dude, they don't have top picks. They don't have good picks, and they're still finding young players that they can plug into the system and be productive. I mean, Puka Nacua is one of the best receivers in the league. The dude was a seventh round pick. Mm-hmm. So you, I think you can see the brilliance of Sean McVay kind of show through in this season. I use them as my dark horse. I hope they fucking make the playoffs. I hope they get, I hope the Rams get a playoff game. I hope Aaron Donald gets one more playoff game as a Ram. But this kind of brings me to my hot take on this game, or kind of this week. If you put a gun to my head, if the Ravens and the 49ers played right now, I'm taking the Ravens.
Ooh.
Dude, I'm taking the Ravens, dude. You take away Mark Andrews and Lamar Jackson is still fucking balling. You take away Deebo Samuel, what's Brock Purdy done? He's 0-3, or at least 0-1 without Deebo. So part of me wants to say that the Ravens are the best team in the league, but I do understand that they play in a lesser conference right now. But I think the Ravens' road to the Super Bowl is paved. It's double lane wide, and there's a dash white line in the middle, so they can start passing some people. I think they're gonna get the bye. I don't think there's anybody that can come up and jump and bite them at home. Besides maybe KC if it shakes out that way, but I don't see them losing their division, so it doesn't really matter. But dude, the Ravens are fucking good, man. And when they're averaging 5.3 yards an attempt, Lamar's throwing for 300 yards and 3 touchdowns, dude, you're not gonna fucking beat this team. I know it took, dude. Talk about the ending of this fucking game. Mm-hmm. A walk-off punt return touchdown. All right. So first of all, now I sure wasn't going to get pissed at this podcast. But, dude, why did they have to constitute these overtime rules just for the playoffs? If they constituted the overtime rules for the regular season, too, your boy would have had a push. Your boy would have had a push this weekend instead of fucking losing outright. So I think that is bullshit that we have different rules for the regular season and the playoffs. This isn't fucking hockey, okay? This isn't fucking hockey where dudes are taking fucking skates to the neck and fucking sticks to the teeth and shit like that. Like, I'm pissed about that. But long story short, fun football game to watch. I think it says a lot about both teams. Everything positive. The only negative to take away from this game is the Baltimore defense letting up 31 points. But I think that has something to do with Sean McVay having Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua with Matt Stafford balling right now. And the fact that the Ravens could beat that team definitely outweighs the negatives of their defense giving up 31.
Definitely agree with you. And we've heard a lot throughout the NFL throughout the season about how, given all the injuries to, you know, like Joe Burrow, Andy Richardson, all these quarterbacks that went down in the AFC, that Kansas City had themselves a cakewalk to an appearance to repeat for the Super Bowl. And I'm just going to flat out dispel that right now. I totally agree with you on the Ravens. They're the best team in the AFC. I don't think it's really all that close right now.
They would fuck up the Chiefs right now. If they played today on a neutral field, they played on Mars right now. You give Lamar Jackson zero gravity, son?
Okay. All right.
No, but neutral site. Yeah. The Ravens absolutely womp the Chiefs right now.
Totally agree with you. And I mean, the Jaguars, who are leading the South, they're a bit of a mess. The Dolphins lost on Monday night last night to the Titans in a late game. Tyreek Hill got banged up in that one. RIP, my fantasy perfect season. Come on, Tyreek, you got to stay on the field. But in my opinion, the Ravens are just better. They're better coached. They have a seasoned coach who's been in the league a very long time. And they're going to be a team that's going to be tough to beat. John Harbaugh is seasoned in the playoffs. He's got a Super Bowl. They're always flirting in the playoffs, and
OBJ Renaissance too.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's tough right now to pick against them in the AFC, given what the AFC is. And we know what the AFC is a bunch of middlers fighting for those wild cards right now. I think there's like seven teams.
A bunch of teams play with backup fucking quarterbacks.
Exactly.
Fucking, dude, the Browns are on their third quarter. I know it's Joe Flacco who's this fucking Super Bowl winner, but still they're on there. There's fourth. Teams out there. Fourth. That are, yeah. They're on their fourth QB.
They had Watson, PJ Walker, Dorian
Thompson. Oh, I forgot about PJ Walker. Yeah.
And Joe Flacco.
Oh, fuck, man.
Mm-hmm. So fourth quarterback. They did a stat, and like, damn. It was. I don't think they played more than 2 weeks in a row with the same quarterback. I think this week will be the first one when Joe Flacco plays plays again. Like, isn't that crazy that they're still hanging around? I wrote them off as soon as Watson was out, and that's keep proving
impressive,
me wrong.
Bro. That is impressive.
So
imagine if Joe Flacco – has anybody ever won a Super Bowl ring for two different teams in the same division?
That's a good stat. That
wasn't Peyton the first to do it? The quarterback, starting quarterback for two different teams to win a Super Bowl.
I think so. I think he was the first one with the Broncos and the Colts. Yeah,
dude,
yeah.
That'd be so fucking sick, dude. That would be.
I'd hate it.
That would be.
I'd hate it. As somebody who hates Joe Flacco, but yeah, it would be very cool to see that, especially for a guy who's old and was sitting on his couch watching football with his
family. But how funny would, dude, the Browns have been looking for a solution at quarterback for how fucking long? And in walks a fucking washed up fucking starter that won a fucking Super Bowl with your division rival 10 years ago. That would be fucking hilarious, dude. That would be fucking hilarious. The only team that's allowed to beat the Lions in the Super Bowl is the Browns with Joe Flacco. If they don't have Joe Flacco, fuck that. I'll slash the tires on the team bus. You won't even get there. But the only team that's allowed to beat the Lions in the Super Bowl is the Joe Flacco Browns. That's fucking awesome.
How quickly you abandoned your boy CJ Stroud. How quickly you abandoned him.
Oh, dude. Let my boy's brain rest. We'll be back next year, okay? D'Amico, if you're listening right now, your head was very shiny on Sunday. I saw that. It didn't go unnoticed. I'm still a closet Texans fan. Y'all need to fuck up the offensive line this offseason. We'll say that and we'll move. You would still rather be the Texans than the Patriots. I'm still not backing off that point. I'm still not backing off that point because you have a 40-something-year-old motivational head coach and a top five quarterback in the league this year. MVP fringe candidate before he got injured. Yeah, I'd rather be the Texans. But anyway, get well soon, CJ. Come on the pod once you can. Once you're not sound and light sensitive after the concussion, we're here for you.
All right, let's move on to the team we were just talking about. The team that we thought everybody would have a cakewalk to get to the Super Bowl in the AFC. That's the Kansas City Chiefs at Arrowhead Sunday afternoon, playing against my most hated team of all time, the Buffalo
Bills.
I'm
just gonna let you run on this one, baby. Just go, just fucking.
All right.
Put your head down. Get through the tackle guard gap, and you get to that second level. You start running people over, baby.
The Buffalo Bills win this game 20-17. Kansas City was sloppy in this one throughout the game, in my opinion. Patrick Mahomes. I mean, it's evident with the receivers that he has there. You know, not enough. Not enough.
Appreciate Rice coming right back down to earth.
Yep. Unfortunately, I mean, he did have a pretty good day, though. 7 receptions, 72 yards, and a touchdown. Desperately missed Isaiah Pacheco out there with the running game. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is just not good enough to be a running back for this team. On the Buffalo side of things, they got James Cook going early in this one, which I was like, come on, Kansas City. Like,
but what did we fucking say, dude? What did we say 2 weeks ago, dude? Buffalo gets that fucking ground game working. They're good, dude.
They're able to run the ball, and James Cook was catching the ball as well, too. He had the opening score in this one, and it just seemed like the Chiefs had no answer for it. Josh Allen still found a way. I mean, he had made some plays in this game, but he still found a way to throw a bad interception. And, you know, it seemed like the Chiefs were getting some good pressure on him. He was able to make some plays, so I'll give him a little bit of credit there. But my God, Kansas City, like, this was a game that you needed. Buffalo might have needed it more. Because if the Buffalo loses this game, they're more or less out of the playoffs at that point. I was so rooting for that. It was going to make my day. And then what happened on that last drive happened. My God. Kadarius Toney, you are an absolute rockhead bum, dude. Like, how dumb do you have to be to not even truly check with an official to make sure you're onsides there? They hardly ever make this penalty call in the NFL. And we're going to get to the officials in a minute here. But they hardly ever do this because your receivers, they always will give you the benefit of the doubt and back you up. If you point over at them and look at them and actually point at them, they will back you up.
Or look when you're pointing.
Bro, you were over the nose of the football on the other side. Like, how do you do that? How does that happen? It robbed us of an amazing play in that game. One play that you haven't seen in, I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that, where Kelsey just openly, that was clearly a designed play. That was clearly 100%. Designed.
It was just like the fucking Chargers play a couple weeks ago.
Exactly. It was a beautifully, beautifully schemed up play. It worked to perfection. Ironically, it's Kadarius Toney that scores the touchdown on it. But my God, dude, how dumb do you have to be to make that mistake. Obviously, the Chiefs go nowhere after that 5-yard penalty. I think it was three straight incompletions after that, and the game's over. And, bro, the hissy fit that Patrick Mahomes was throwing on the sideline, I get in the heat in the moment, whatever, it's going to happen. Bro, you freaking doubled down on it in your post-game press conference and called everybody out. Bro, the dude was offsides. He screwed up. He messed up. Like, that's it. Eat it. Call out your receivers. Call out your management for not getting you anybody better. Call them out. But, dude, don't cry to me about that call because it was a penalty 100 times out of 100. I get that the NFL, they don't always call this. And I'm going to get to that point. I'll let you go before we start talking about the officials here, Joe, because I got something to say about, you know, with the timing of that penalty call and everything. But what were your thoughts of how the end of this game happened? I mean, we always obviously know the end result, but I want your thoughts on what happened with that sequence.
I guess I'm just going to disregard everything you just said, and I'm going to go right to actually after the penalty. I think the most telling thing about this game is how the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes handled this after the penalty was called. I think that shows a team that's deeply insecure and floundering for a sense of the success that they've had over the last, whatever, 5 years. I think it is very concerning to have that level of frustration in an organization this late in the season when you're trying to contend for a team. The only caveat I will say is it does remind me a lot of the 2018 Patriots after the Miami Miracle, where they then went on a tear and ended up winning the Super Bowl. But I don't think this says much about the Bills. They scored 20 fucking points. I don't think they're not gonna win games on defense this year. I think the 17 points the Chiefs scored says way more about the Chiefs offense than it does about the Bills 100%. Defense. So I'm a big Mahomes guy, but he's gotta play quarterback. He has to play quarterback. I understand that his thing that takes him above everybody else is his improvisation and his ability to make something out of nothing. But I think that when you have one legitimate playmaker in Travis Kelce and you have a bunch of other ancillary players, I think that it is imperative to stick to the script as much as possible, because those players that you've never played with, like all of these wide receivers, Rishay Rice, Kadarius Toney, who was an acquisition halfway through last year, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, who's as his second year with the team, Watson, like Sky Moore is a second year player. Like, these are all players that haven't been there. They don't have a tenure there. It's either their second season or their first season with the team. You don't have that rapport with someone for when it breaks down to be able to be on the same page without a plan being called, without a play being called. So I think it's if Mahomes wasn't the quarterback in this game, it would have been a lot worse. But I think that he is culpable in some of this, I would say the downturn on the KC offense. I think that he needs to read the room, and the fact that he has a lot of young pass catchers that only really know the play called. They haven't played with you for the last 3 or 4 years, knowing exactly what you want as soon as the play breaks down. Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman and Travis Kelce, like those guys that you – and Sammy Watkins, those guys that you've been winning Super Bowls with, those aren't your pass – besides Kelce, those really aren't your pass catchers anymore. You have to stick with the script. You have to maximize what these plays give you instead of bailing on these plays and thinking you're going to make a play every time. Because newsflash, dude, you're not Lamar Jackson. You can't make the play yourself. You're going to get out of the first play, but there needs to be somebody open or at least somebody in the right spot for you to throw them open. And that doesn't happen with rookie and second year and guys you don't have a rapport with.
Totally agree. Totally agree with all that. You hit the nail on the head. Mahomes should have been focusing a lot of that frustration and that anger on his coach and on his GM for not addressing that position more. I mean, it's obvious. It's been obvious throughout the year. I mean, Rashee Rice has shown some promise in this offense this year. But again, he's a rookie. Like, you can't expect that rookie to really just truly carry you as your number one wide receiver. You can't. You obviously have Travis Kelce.
Wait, you can't have a rookie wide receiver carry you the entire season?
No. I know where you're going with this. I'm not even going to entertain it right now. Okay. Nice try. I'm not taking the bait. I'm not taking the dollar bill on the fishing pole right there. I'm staying on topic.
You got to be quicker than that. DeMario Douglas, shout out to you, Pop Douglas. Come on the pod.
But, you know, it's just Travis Kelce's getting older. Like, he's not getting any younger. And it's just, he's finding out what life is like and when your roster's going to turn over. And I think that's what made the Patriots dynasty of 20 years so great and why they were so able to go to those 10 straight, you know, AFC title games and all that. I think that this might be the first year that Kansas City doesn't get there. I'm not ready to go there yet, but I think it's going to show, it's going to help the Patriots dynasty, what we witnessed over the last 20 years, really, really stick out, because Mahomes is the best quarterback of this generation. I don't think anybody's going to disagree with that. And just because he's one guy, if you don't have supporting pieces around it, it's not going to work. But I want to get to the officials in this. I really do.
Real quick, before you get to the officials, I can put a guarantee that the Hunt family puts pieces around Patrick Mahomes this year. I can guarantee you this is the exact same thing as the 04.5 to 06.5 slump that the Patriots went through. I can guarantee you that. I think that the front office and the ownership of KC is going to look at it and be like, yeah, that was dumb. Let's get him some fucking help.
Let's get him Randy Moss.
Right? I think that's coming, Doug.
It very well could, and they'd be smart to do it.
It should. Yeah, it should.
But the officials, all right. Did you guys notice, like, I think it was the play or two after that debacle that occurred with Kadarius Toney, that Von Miller lined up in the neutral zone and they didn't flag it? And it's one of those things like, dude, you're making a name for yourself in a big, big spot in a big game.
Von Miller, who is going through a domestic assault claim, lines up in the neutral zone and doesn't get. So, first of all, he's allowed on the field. Second of all, he's lined up in the neutral zone. Like, there's a lot to unpack there. Why is he on the field and why is he in the neutral zone?
Absolutely.
I'm innocent and proven guilty. Von Miller, I'm not trying to disparage your name. I'm just saying that players have not played for less. And the fact that he's in a game when his wife is claiming domestic violence, and then he's lined up in the neutral zone, literally the play after Kadarius Toney scores a touchdown, but they call it back because he was in the neutral zone. Stinky, 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 stinky NFL.
Absolutely. And it's like, dude, get your heads out of your asses. You're showing up in the biggest moments once again. And like I said, when we were talking about the call, offensive offsides, it is so rarely called. The officials will give the benefit of the doubt to the offensive player. I'll be honest with you, a half step for 6 inches on the football isn't going to make or break a play. And I was listening to Boston Talk Radio this week, and they were kind of talking about a lot of these procedural penalties that occur and rules that occur on the offense that are a bit antiquated and outdated, like the whole got to cover the tight end, you know, or whatever. All those rules are a little bit antiquated, and they let a lot of them slide because of the fact that you need to build the product. And if you're calling these ticky-tack little things that really, at the end of the day, aren't going to have a whole lot of, you know, impact on the play.
Especially that play, dude, where he's like not even the primary. He's not getting open off the snap. He's not making somebody miss. He's literally just, all right, I'm going to run to this spot and wait for Kelce to throw it across the field. You know what I mean? It's not like him being offsides has no bearing on the success of that play.
The six inches he was offside, he's going to be in the same spot to catch that ball regardless of, you know, what happened. It wasn't even the primary target. Shame on him for not doing what the receivers are taught to do and point to the official, make sure I'm good or back up or whatever.
Like, he did, but he just he didn't even look at the court. He pointed, but he was like, so if he's pointing towards the ref, he's looking towards the center. So it's almost like you're a dumbass times two. You need to do both. You need to look at the center. All right, my foot goes here. Now I look out to the ref. I point to the ref. Am I good? Yes, I'm good. Okay, now I'm ready to run my route. Like,
he's a guy.
Dude, I don't know what it is against Kadarius Toney, bro. Like, you gotta. And he, your brain. He's a fucking crazy athlete. He just doesn't. His brain just doesn't. I don't know if it's his brain doesn't keep up or his awareness or like if he gets a little like happy in the moment. I don't know what it is, bro, but it's like it's the same kind of mistakes for him every time.
He gets no benefit of the doubt. He had a couple of bad drops.
Exactly.
He's got a bunch of drops throughout the year.
I went into the group chat and said this was a terrible call, which it was. which this was a terrible call. This was the right call. It was the right call, but it was terrible. It was terrible, dude.
In that moment, yes.
Terrible call. This is a terrible call. This is, dude, even though the Patriots won the Super Bowl this year, this is Chris Jones lining up fucking 6 inches offsides in the AFC Championship game, dude. That call and this call, they both have no bearing on the outcome of the game. Even though that Chiefs call does have a bearing on the outcome of the game, as in Tom Brady threw an interception, but it's not because Chris Jones jumped the snap.
D Ford, sorry.
It's not because D Ford jumped the snap and hit Tom Brady and made him fumble. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think you're 100% right on your railing against the officials this year. Something makes me want to say that this guy, he called another offensive offsides against the Packers this year that had a very, let's say, questionable timing, depending on where maybe public money may be sitting. So, I'm just going to echo my point from every time that you fucking bring up the officials. You're right to bring up the officials. You're right that it's super inconsistent. You're right that they need more infrastructure in getting NFL officials to the league and parameters as in which they need to bring them into the league. But my thing, I'm going to tell you the same thing I tell you every fucking time. If the NFL is involved with gambling, it is not going to get better. Because if they think they want us to think that they're inept in making mistakes, when maybe they're not as inept and they're not really making as many mistakes as we think there are. That's my only point about the officials is I'm not 100% sure they're as inept as we think they are. And I'm not 100% sure if they're quote unquote trying as hard to be objective as they should be.
Fair enough. We'll save the rest of the official talk for the next episode, because I'm sure we'll have something to talk about with the officials.
Oh, there'll be another play.
I'll be the one beating the drum on it, because it's the worst I've seen it in years. I want to move on to the Sunday night game. This was a big, big game with playoff implications attached to it. The Dallas Cowboys and the Philadelphia Eagles down in Dallas at Jerry World. You had the 10-2 Philadelphia Eagles taking on the 9-3 Dallas Cowboys. And boy, the Dallas Cowboys are now 10-3. They demolished the Eagles in this game. I think that they were – I watched probably about half of this game where I was like, okay, all right, I'm out. Yeah. But it just was another situation. I think we've kind of hit on it in the past about the Eagles. I mean, if Jalen Hurts doesn't get any touchdowns, like, this team's not really gonna have success. And I think this says this game – and I'll turn it over to you once I say this, but I think this says a lot about the Philadelphia Eagles. Based a lot of it, we kind of already knew where they were winning games this year, where they perhaps probably shouldn't have been winning games, or they were winning games by getting lucky. And having a team like Dallas in their division, who I'm not sure who even is in first place in the division right now, based on that game, because I think they've split. They have the better conference record and better divisional record right now.
Dude, so Dallas is 7-0. I'll go into this when you're done.
And it's just, I think it says more about Philly. I think they're going to be a team that could be in trouble coming in, you know, down the stretch here. They have a pretty cupcake schedule the rest of the way. So I expect them to win out just because of who they're playing. They're playing the Seahawks. They play the Giants twice, and they play the Cardinals. That's cupcake. 3-1 at worst. If they want to drop a game, it's going to be Seattle's going to get lucky, but I don't see that happening. I expect them to go 4-0. So I expect that to happen. So they'll be right there at the end. Dallas is a team that they have a little bit of a tougher schedule down the stretch here. They got to play the Bills next week, the Dolphins, the Lions, and the Commanders. So I think there's a good chance Philly may luck themselves into a divisional win there, because just based on the schedule, the strengths of schedule left, but I don't see this team going anywhere in the playoffs. Maybe rephrase that. I don't see them making a serious run at a Super Bowl.
So, dude, I hate doing this, but dude, I'm right. This fucking Philly team is a paper tiger. They cannot play from behind. Jalen Hurts is not the most valuable player in the league. He's not the most valuable player in the NFC. He's not the most valuable player in the NFC East. He's not the most valuable player on the Eagles. he's not the most valuable player on the Eagles offense. So
solid breakdown right there.
Dude, it's easy money, dude. I am plucking the fruit from the lowest hanging branch on the shortest tree in the orchard. Like you said, dude, we preface these games with who's it say more about? This says 10 times more about the Eagles than it does the fucking Cowboys, dude. You cannot, dude, the Eagles. Jalen Hurts is a good quarterback, dude. He's a good quarterback. But he's the classic quarterback where if it's out of his control, or if I don't know how to preface this, but if the game isn't predicated and it isn't scripted in his way, he's going to have a really, 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 really tough time in putting his foot in the ground and stemming the tide and making it go another way. If Jalen Hurts gets up on you 7-0 and they can run the ball and push him into the end zone at will, you're fucked. You're fucked. The Eagles, dude, the Eagles aren't bad. They're just not a good play from behind team. And the other thing I want to say is good luck in the playoffs with this fucking defense, Doug. Good luck in the playoffs, dude. They're going to have to, like, obviously they lost to the Cowboys. They have the 49ers on that side. Dude, they have, dude, even the Eagles versus, like, a team like the Rams who have, like, multiple pass catchers. Like, those are teams that, like, I don't think the Eagles are as locked tight as everybody thinks they are. They're a very good team. Jalen Hurts is a very good player. I just don't think that thing is there with them anymore. I don't think they have that thing. You know what I mean? That thing. I think the Ravens have that thing. Even though they're reeling right now, I think the Chiefs have that thing, or Mahomes and Reed have that thing. I think the Niners, they have that thing. Purdy has that thing. They have that thing. And I don't know. I would take Jalen Hurts on the Patriots 10 times over 10 over Brock Purdy, but I want Brock Purdy in the Niners offense and then on mm-hmm. the Niners team more than I want Hurts on the Eagles team. So I'm right, of course, as usual, but I think that this is, besides the 49ers loss where I think that game kind of got away from you, I think there was multiple times I watched the entirety of this game, and there was multiple times because I had the Eagles money line just like Shiloh gave out the pick on our pod. I was mm-hmm. like, I fucking love that pick. I love the Eagles going in there after they lost Dom. They had this huge Dom thing. They're going in as a road dog, divisional game, good team. I was like, yeah, there's a lot of signals there that point towards the Eagles winning that game. So I was in on that game. I watched the whole thing, dude. There was multiple fucking times, dude, at the end of the first half, at the beginning of the second half, in the middle of the second half, that the Eagles had to fucking get back in this game and maybe even win this game. And they just let it slip through their fucking hands every fucking time. And it was frustrating as an Eagles backer, but I'm just happy, even though I would be happy to be an Eagles fan, but I'm happy I'm not an Eagles fan, like, thinking about this loss, because it would be a little bit jarring to me.
Absolutely.
And other thing I want to say, dude, Dallas, if they get a home playoff game, bro, they're 7-0 at home. Mm-hmm. So if they win that division and they get a home playoff game, the NFC, even though it might run through San Fran, there's a part of it that might run through Dallas, and they're fucking 7-0 at home right now.
That's big. And yeah, I just want to, you know, with the Eagles, like, they lost to two of their major playoff opponent that they're fighting to, you know, get to the Super Bowl. And they didn't just lose, dude. They got stomped. It wasn't even a game. It wasn't even a game. Like, these games were blowouts. 42-19 against the 49ers, 33-13 against the Cowboys, your division rival, on top of your, you know, somebody's going to get in your way to, you know, make the Super Bowl again.
Oh, and didn't the Eagles have a defensive – they had a defensive touchdown in this game too, right?
Yes, they did.
Yeah, they had a fumble return for a touchdown. So it's like, dude, the offense scored 6 fucking points.
Mm-hmm. That is not something you want to see happen. Actually, it was Dallas who had the fumble touchdown. It was Dallas.
Oh, okay. Maybe I got
nope, I lied. It was the Eagles.
I was like, I'm almost positive –
Jalen
Carter was like, yeah, dude, they could have fucking come back and won this game, but they didn't. I don't know. Yeah, they fucked up they let it slip through their grasp every time.
That was a moment when that happened where, you know, Dallas was blowing them out in the game. It was 24-6, and that happens. That's usually, for a really sound, good football team, that's a jump start. And I think that was that in the third quarter? When was that?
Yeah, early in the third quarter. halfway through the third quarter.
Yep. So something like that happens, it's like, bro, that's your moment to really start to at least give them a chance to get.
Is there anything more majestic than a player like Jalen Carter running 40 yards for a touchdown on a score?
I think of Sam Adams back when Buffalo played New England, and you see this big, massive dude running down the field.
Shout out Dan Connolly. You should have scored on that play, you motherfucker.
Yeah. Some of those great highlights there. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I think, you know, we got, 4 weeks left of the NFL season. A lot to still be decided in terms of the playoffs. I think we all agree about the AFC. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams sitting at 7-6 right now in the AFC, fighting for those 3 wild card spots. The NFC is a little bit more decided. You're 7th seed. I mean, you have a couple of teams sitting at 6-7 fighting for that 7th spot. So it's not as I don't want to say it's not as quality, but like, you kind of get where I'm going with that. Like 7-6 is better than 6-7. We obviously know that. NFC is a little bit more top heavy, in my opinion. They have a lot of good to go with, and then, you know, the top of the standing. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see how the playoffs shake out. Definitely looking forward to the season wrapping up and getting into some playoff football, since I have nothing left to watch for with my New England Patriots, who were, as a matter of fact, mathematically eliminated from the playoffs this weekend. The earliest they've been eliminated from the playoffs since the year 2000, when Joe was in diapers. So actually Kojak was in diapers at that point. So, yeah, so definitely something to keep an eye out as the season comes down here. I want to move on to the pick segment, Joe, and I don't know if I actually really want to do this to recap what happened last week. My picks were dead in the water very, very early on. Where do we sit? Where do we sit as to our record for last week and for the season this year? Last week killed me, dude. The week before was so great with how Houston and Indianapolis won so late, dude. The most excited I've been watching football all season with the way the Patriots have been, where I actually got into a game and was really rooting for something to see it happen, and it happened. I was so amped. I woke my kids. I scared my kids. My babies were eating a bottle, and they freaking jumped out of their seat when I got up and yelled when Houston picked off the ball there. This week was not as good.
Hold on one second. I have something to set the mood here.
I don't even know if I want to hear it.
As we get flagged, cry, but
as we get flagged for copyright,
brother. No, I only played 15 seconds. I made sure. Brother, this is no longer a gambling podcast.
Let's just blame Shiloh. We'll blame Shiloh.
I didn't even put his shit in the fucking stats, bro, just because I knew it would be against us, dog. We're in a bad way, bro. All right. It was a 1-5 week. If we include our – I'm about to cry. But if we include the guest pick, we had a 1-6 week. That
who got the win? Who got the win? Who got the win?
You did, bro. And I tailed your ass in that win. I'll get to that. But so overall, we're 31-30-2, over 500. Damn, and for our locks, we're 11-8, which is still 3 games above 500. We're still over that 66%. We're almost over that 66% there. So last week we had Shiloh, our guest picker. He gave us Philly money line. We just went over that. Talk about
pain.
I'll get canceled if I describe in detail how that pick went. Then let's hit a little positive note here. We had Burge wanting a walk off punt. Never mind. That was my loss. We had Burge win with Cleveland -3. Mm-hmm. And then
thank you, Joe.
Yeah, I know.
Flacco, not you.
I know. He's my favorite. He's the best. And then I'm going to start playing Sarah McLaughlin again. Sarah McLaughlin, if you're listening, come on the pod. But Burrs, his other two picks were Indy -1, and then we had his lock at Detroit minus three, which they obviously out. I think that that pick missed by 18 points. So we made fun of Kojak by missing on 20 points last week. We can definitely make fun of Burge for missing by 18 points this week.
Do we got to get into the backstory as why I have that pick? Do we got to get into that?
Yeah, 100%. Why did you get into that? Why did you get that pick, Burge? Who was the first person to put that in the chat?
I saved you from that. This humiliation that I now have to endure.
Save me from what? A different 0-3 week? A different hodgepodge of horrible picks? Oh, I took this bad pick from you. Yeah, I just substituted with another loss. I don't know what you want. Anyway, great pitch. Great argument by Burge bringing that fucking Detroit minus three to light there. The closest I got was Baltimore minus seven. If they instituted the overtime rules in the regular season, this would have been a push because the Baltimore would have had to kick the field goal there. So, fuck Roger Goodell. As a Patriots fan, I've been on that for a minute. Carolina plus six, dumbass pick. Dumbass pick. Dumbass pick. Dumbass pick. Betting on Bryce Young? Yikes. And then Houston minus 5.5. Wait, hold on. Is this the – no. This one's bad. This one's bad. So I had Houston minus 5.5.
Let me go back to the park. 24 points. 24 points.
Dude, a 30-point loss by Joe.
I lied. You're going off the spread there, right? Yeah, because you added the 6 points, right?
Yes,
yeah.
yes.
And it was a Jets, too.
Is like, dude, you know what's funny? A 30-point swing might not be the worst the Jets fucked me this year. The Jets could fuck me a little bit more by playing Aaron Rodgers.
Tony Arawaska.
They know. Tony A. Yeah. So let's flow right into the picks for this week because hopefully we can fucking get off the schneid this week. My first pick this week is going to be Cincinnati minus 3.5. They're going with Minnesota's going with Mullins as quarterback. Jake Browning's been playing good. I think Cincinnati's been playing with a little bit of mojo. You want to get on this line quick because I think that a lot of people are going to be on the Cincinnati side, especially with the Vikings changing quarterbacks and their ineptitude on offense. I think there was fucking 3 points scored in that game or 6 points scored in that game this weekend. So yeah, good luck, Minnesota backers. I'm just kidding. I hope all of you lose. Then the next one I have, this is a purely a Burge Cialis or a Burge Viagra pick. This is strictly Burge pleasure. Dallas plus two in Buffalo. I think that this plus two line is Vegas favoring Buffalo a little bit more because, I mean, so you used to get 3 points for being at home. Right now you get a point and a half, depending on who the opponent is. I think this is technically a pick 'em when it comes to the line, who's at home. So yeah, I'll take Dallas plus two on this one. And then my lock of the week, I'm going to do it. I'm going to ride the first year quarterback or the first year starter after he's been going off for a couple weeks. Give me the Green Bay Jordan Love's minus 3.5 versus the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So Green Bay's at home. Jordan Love been balling out. I have another stat here. Tampa Bay has lost 4 of their last 5 on the road, and they've won their last two, but they haven't won 3 in a row since the 2021 season when they won 4 in a row, their last 3 games of the season, and a playoff game with Tom Brady. So give me Green Bay minus 3.5 at home versus Tampa Bay. Burge, fuck me up.
All right, I'm going to start off. I'm going to pick against one of your picks from last week. We're going Atlanta minus 3 against Carolina on the road. Carolina is an absolute dumpster fire. They fired their head coach. There's nothing really positive about what they've got going on down there right now. They don't have their own draft pick, which is currently sitting at number 1. They seem like a team that's just lost and trying to get through the motions to get to the end of the year. Atlanta has shown flashes this year, where they've looked competent. You know, they're still fighting for a division title there at 6-7 against, they're fighting with that garbage division down there. coming off a tight loss to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you know, they're going to be ready to go. They're going to want to get out there and get themselves back in the divisional race. Give me them -3 on the road. I'm going to pick a team that really hurt me last week, but I've been kind of riding with them a little bit this year, as much as I hate the franchise as a whole. But I'm going to go with the Indianapolis Colts -2 at home against the Mitch Trubisky-led Pittsburgh Steelers. I got no faith in what Mitch Trubisky is. We saw it against the Patriots. They got drastically outplayed against a really, really bad team. I expect it to continue. Pittsburgh's a team that I see falling out of the playoff hunt as one of these 7-6 teams that falls down. Indianapolis, with Gardner Minshew at quarterback, has had some really good performances. I expect them to rebound after last week and on Saturday to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers, laying the 2.5 points. My lock for the week, a team we've been gushing over on this podcast today, it's the Baltimore Ravens. They're on the road in Jacksonville. Jacksonville's a team that is flirting with a little bit of disaster down there. Trevor Lawrence isn't completely healthy. I am all about Baltimore cruising to the AFC title game this year. So give me the Ravens laying the 3.5 down in Jacksonville.
That's a good number. Kojak, do you want to participate? Oh, good. No, great time to have technical issues. Kojak, do you want to give a pick? No, his AirPods died. This is great. We're going to have to now. There's extreme editing going on. Now he's clicking a button. One more button to click.
Expletives behind the mic mute.
Something is going on. Yes, it is. The thing that's going on is you not being able to speak.
Do we want to just say his pick?
Yeah. So if anybody's
wondering,
if anybody's wondering, once a week we have play over our speakers. 3 weeks ago it was me with ESPN blaring in my ears when I was on a long soliloquy about God knows what. Last week it was Burge getting absolutely fucking ear effed by ESPN again when he was going on a soliloquy. And now the one time on this fucking podcast, the one time on this podcast that we want to throw it to our producer in the woods of Danville, New Hampshire, is the one time of the episode that, I don't know, is it Dawson's Creek? Is it Gossip Girl? It's not The Sopranos. It's not The Wire. Billions.
I got blasted by ESPN tonight. You didn't even know it.
Really?
I did, yeah.
See, this is
while I was talking.
We're growing as a podcast. And I hope Kojak knows that we have been stalling for him for the last minute to see if maybe he could.
Dude, I don't know what the fuck is going on.
He's back.
I had the drive open, our drive, and then last week's episode started playing. I'm like, Shiloh is not with us right now. Like, he's just blasting my fucking ear. Shit.
So do you want to gamble with us this weekend? Give me a pick. Give me a pick that I can throw in here, huh? How you doing?
I'm trying to, but you fucking stole mine.
I stole yours?
Yeah, I was going to go
Dallas. After I put my picks into the group chat at 5:16 p.m., 2 hours and 59 minutes before we record.
This is fucking...
2 hours and 12 minutes before you get into the shower and cook some chicken titties?
Chicken titties.
You shitting me?
I'm just going to go Dallas money line because you can go fuck yourself.
Good. Dallas
money line? What do we got on odds on that one? Hold on. Dallas money line.
I can't find the fucking thing now. I'm just all over the place.
No, this is great podcasting.
Why? Dallas money line +110. Oh.
+110.
That's what I got it at.
+109.
We're just going to fight. We're not going to do another. We're not going to do an episode next week. Me and Kojak are just going to fight. And we're going to put that on YouTube.
Live streamed.
Excuse me.
Okay.
Well, that might be a good time to plug it up, Burge.
Yeah. As always, boys, listeners, all y'all, Give us a follow on Twitter machine at BTP underscore podcast underscore. We do jersey giveaways from time to time. I'll tease it. We have one more jersey in our inventory currently that we are going to look at a good time to give that one away. I'm not going to tell you who it is, but it's a good one. It's actually a good one if you're talking about Patriots fans.
The player has won multiple Super Bowls with the Patriots. Let's just put it that way.
Absolutely. So keep your eyes peeled for that. I'm on Twitter at BurgeTheGoalie. Joe Scher at the underscore Juicy Jew. Kojak is at Allen13Brennan. If you guys like hockey, again, check out the Two Pad Stack podcast at Two Pad Stack Pod on the social. We've got a pretty, I'll tease a pretty big guest next week for all you hockey fans. Current member of the Boston Bruins. Current player. Member of the team. So be sure to follow the socials. You'll get to get the details later in the week as to who that's going to be. But we are stoked about having that. If you want to go to a sporting event, go to SeatGeek, use the code number 2PADSTACKPOD, $20 off your first order. So be sure to check all that out. On that note, you fellas have a good week. Looking forward to some football. And
BTP fans, be on the lookout for some guests coming up in the next couple weeks, couple months, okay? You keep peeping this podcast. We keep giving you shit to listen to, baby.
We've got some stuff working behind the scenes, so be sure to keep following us for updates on all that. Have a good week, boys.
Oh, yeah.